Good morning and welcome. You are tuned into 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft. It's books, writing and literary culture every weekend, every Saturday morning from 10 a.m. I am your host and resident book nerd, Andrew Popel. Now, just a week ago, we were enjoying the beautiful sunshine and atmosphere down at Walsh Bay. Sydney Writers Festival was in full swing, and what a time to be a reader. Now, the festival may be finished for 2017, but that does not mean that all the festival joy is gone. And today on the show, I am going to be speaking with Michaela Maguire. She is the Sydney Writers Festival director, and we're going to reflect a little bit on some of the highlights of this year's festival, what's to come for the festival, and also where you can get more great festival content if you just didn't have enough. Later on in the show, we're going to be doing a bit of an in case you missed it. There were so many events, you couldn't possibly have made it to all of them. I'm impressed if you did, or even if you tried. But there was one panel on blurred culture, and Rudy Bremer from 2SER's The Thin Black Line spoke with Clever Man creator Ryan Griffin about what blurred culture is and representation in arts and the media. That's what's coming up on Final Draft, books, writing and literary culture. Got a short break and then stay tuned. My name is Andrew Popel and you are tuned in to 2SER 107.3.
Sydney Film Festival is proud to continue their partnership with Screen Australia's Indigenous Department as they bring a First Nations program back to the silver screen for 2017. Don't miss our opening night film, We Don't Need a Map, by Warwick Thornton, director of Khan winning Samson and Delilah. The provocative documentary explores Australia's relationship with the Southern Cross from Indigenous spirituality to modernity. And competing in the Documentary Australia Foundation Awards are The Powerful Connection to Country, about the people of the Pilbara, and the raw and funny tale of teaching remote Indigenous literacy in my own words. See the full program of First Nations films and get tickets at sff.org.au. Sydney Film Festival, sponsors of 2SER.
Unlock your creative potential without giving up your day job. NIDA Studio courses run part-time across weekends, offering pre-professional training for ages 15+. Guided by Australia's leading practitioners, you'll develop skills in acting, directing, writing, filmmaking or musical theatre over 6 or 12 months. Audition June 24 for a July start. Get details at nida.edu.au/studios. NIDA is a proud sponsor of 2SER.
Good morning. You're tuned into 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft and I am Andrew Popel. Have you come down from your high yet? Did you enjoy the Writers' Festival last week? I had an amazing 4 days, 5 days. I think I made it down there and it was brilliant. And so I'm really excited to be able to introduce Michaela Maguire. You have met her on the show before. She is the Writers' Festival director. Michaela, thank you for joining me again.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And look, congratulations. Congratulations.
Oh, thanks.
Gemma obviously shared her secret for getting summer sun in winter. It was amazing. And the events I went to, they were just fantastic. How are you feeling, though, in the post-festival haze?
I'm feeling tired, but very contented and happy, which I think is only to be expected.
Now, it was a wonderful festival. All the events that I went to were just so well received. Everyone was excited. Your theme for the festival was refuge, and I mean, I personally felt like you created a wonderful refuge in each of the events, but do you have an event or a moment from the week that exemplified refuge for you?
For me, it was probably opening night. I think that really set the tone for the week in a wonderful way. We invited for the first time 3 authors to share the opening night podium. In the past, it's always been one author delivering a keynote speech. But this year I decided it would be nice to hear a multitude of voices, and especially at the start of the week where it kind of serves as, I guess, a taste test for people who might still be deciding what they want to see later in the week. And it worked really well. Britt Bennett and Enright and George Saunders all delivered a 15-minute talk on their interpretation of the theme of refuge. Britt is a debut novelist who I think would have been quite unknown to a lot of the audience, which kind of made it all the more amazing that she was so well received. She's impossibly wise, very smart politically, and I think the whole audience necks were just about breaking as they were nodding along vehemently as she spoke about the current political climate in the United States, where she's from, and kind of how that's reverberating throughout the world. And then Anne Enright did our first ever fictional interpretation of the theme of the festival and read a 15-minute story that she'd written just for us about a woman travelling through an airport and kind of not really being sure of where she was and where she landed because she'd been travelling for so long. And it was incredibly dramatic and tense as it went along, and she realised that she was a refugee. And I think the whole audience were kind of groaning along in empathy as she was, before it was, her circumstances were clear, when she was having very first world problems about, you know, not being able to find a hotel and just dreaming of clean sheets. And then when it became clear that neither of those things were in her future, it was a tremendous revelation and one that was very deeply felt throughout the audience. And then George Saunders got up and spoke about all these plane disasters. Actually, it was a common theme, about being on a plane when he thought that he was going to die because the plane had hit a flock of geese and it started plummeting towards the earth. But he spoke about and paid tribute to what he calls the two holy acts of reading and writing, which was a terrific note to start the week on. And I think it continued from there in a really positive way.
It did for me. I didn't actually get to the opening night, but I had a blast bouncing between all the events. It's, you know, what you said about Britt Bennett, I caught her on two panels. One that really stood out for me was the gala event, Advice from Nasty Women, as well as there was Anita Heiss, Durga Chubose, Viola DeGrado. There were, amongst others, there were about seven nasty women on stage discussing what it means to be a woman, powerful and influential in our world. And Anita, it really stood out for me. She reflected on three amazing lives: Barangaroo, Ujuru Nunakul, and Rosie Scott. She also, I think it was a question from the audience, she reflected on the effort and the strain that it can take on one's mental health, it takes to be strong, to continue fighting in circumstances. Do you feel like a festival like we've just had is maybe a balm, a strength for those seeking to change the world with ideas?
I hope so. I think writing, whether it's for pleasure or for a political purpose, or, you know, whether it's writing a novel or an opinion piece that you actually hope is going to help change people's mind, it's incredibly lonely and it's always solitary. So I think for writers who spend much of their year kind of toiling by themselves, it's an incredible opportunity for them to come together and not only find their peers who can empathise entirely with what their way of life is, but also to find new readers, and that's incredibly rewarding.
I think it was actually one of the panels that Britt was on, and she reflected, as you say, she's a debut author, that if you'd told her even 12 months ago that she'd be sitting in Australia talking about her book, and it was this incredibly surprising thing for her, and she was amazing every time she was on stage. And thinking about the way ideas come together like that, was there anything that surprised you, any panels that you thought, what a just an amazing collection of thinkers, and you were so glad to see them together?
Well, I have to be upfront and confess that out of the 400 events, I got to see precisely four because I was running around backstage for the entire week. So my perspective on the festival is probably more limited than, well, certainly yours and just about anybody else who was there. But I did see the closing night gala, which was themed Maybe This Will Help, which is kind of, we build it as writers offering remedies for chaos. Things that will help us through anxiety-inducing times, like the one that we're currently living in. And Hisham Mattar was just glorious in every event that I heard him speak at. People were just talking about how incredibly elegant and classy and graceful and full of forgiveness he was. And he spoke about his relationship with art, which he communicates really beautifully in his memoir, The Return. But he's just such a wise man that I felt kind of reassured just listening to him speak.
So on behalf of Sydney, knowing now that you only got to four events, thank you so much. You've put in so much effort to do this, and, you know, maybe we need to have a little festival just for you to get along to more things. What comes next there now, though? The Writers' Festival has a big change up over the next 12 months, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, I'm looking forward to personally getting to catch up on everything that I missed on the podcast, which is the one saving grace why I don't feel violently jealous towards all of our audience members, because I will get to hear everything over the next couple of months. And I guess I'll start making notes for what seemed to work and what didn't work so well, and if there's areas for improvement. But yeah, we've got a big physical change coming up. We're moving to Carriageworks for the next two festivals. But it's a really exciting way to, and an opportunity to rethink what the festival can and should look like for a couple of years, and I hope that we'll find a whole new audience.
I love the space down at Carriageworks, so I am actually really excited, apart from the fact that it's a lot closer to where I live in the inner west.
We've done it just for you, don't worry.
And you've beautifully plugged the podcast. Where are people going to find it? That's over at swf.org.au?
Yeah, if you sign up for our mailing list, we'll send two new podcasts into your inbox every week and we'll let you know what's coming up. But you can just get it wherever you get your podcasts from as well.
So apart from just tuning in every Saturday to Final Draft, people can find books in their inbox. This is just kismet. Michaela, thank you so much for taking the time to wrap up Sydney Writers Festival for all of the readers who enjoyed themselves on Final Draft. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks so much.
You are tuned into 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft, and that was Michaela Maguire. She is the director of the Sydney Writers Festival. My name is Andrew Popel. There's still more Final Draft to come. We've got an interview with Ryan Griffin. Rudy Bremer from 2SER's The Thin Black Line spoke with Ryan about blurred culture. But before we get to that, I've got a track for you. This is from Melbourne singer-songwriter Leah Senior, and it's Pretty Faces.
Pretty faces, you've got a lot to live for. You dress the street up and take me on a fancy walk. And your reflections in shop fronts aren't for buying, but they're window shopping and you can't blame them for trying. Silence is easy, 'cause pictures don't have to talk. Words flowing freely when the world is in your look. But I like shadows under eyes, crooked teeth and worn down smiles. Legs not built for running miles. Pretty faces, you've got a lot to live for. You lose a lover, find another at your front door. Time folds the skin between the brows of those that seldom win. And I like the shadows under eyes, crooked teeth and worn down smiles. Legs not built for running miles. Pretty faces escape the bars and darker places. And oh, I like the way your head hangs low, your shoulders slope. And sometimes I'm amazed that nobody seems to know when you cross a room to me. Maybe we're both freaks. Pretend we're on TV. And it's 1963. And you play the soundtrack, and I all the parts. And our average faces light up as we play average stars. Pretty faces depend on how you frame them. Looking at old pictures, knowing I'll never feel the same again.
Sydney Film Festival is now on sale. There's over 350 screenings of 288 films from 62 countries over 12 days in 10 venues. From the magnificent State Theatre in the city to the Ritz Cinema in Randwick, there's bound to be a film and venue just right for you. It all happens from June 7 to 18, and you can buy your flexi passes or single tickets right now at sff.org.au. Sydney Film Festival, proudly sponsoring 2SER 107.3.
Good morning, you are tuned into 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft. The track you just heard was Leah Senior with Pretty Faces. Now, Sydney Writers Festival featured talks, debates, theatre, performance panels, so many amazing events across the week. Even Festival Director Michaela Maguire, when we were chatting before, admitted she couldn't get to everything she would have liked. So what I thought we might do is check out some events that you may have missed. Blurred Culture was a panel featuring Roxane Gay, Colson Whitehead, Miranda Tapsell, Nayuka Gori and Ryan Griffin that looked at issues of representation and race in geek and nerd culture. Rudy Bremer from 2SER's The Thin Black Line spoke with Cleverman creator Ryan Griffin about the panel and about what blurred culture actually is.
I wouldn't say there's a definitive definition of what a blur is. I think it is a subcategory of nerd culture within pop culture in general, I think. But it is, it is black people enjoying that nerd culture on their own level and attaching themselves to certain aspects that reflect who they are as a person. And I think in that sort of pop culture world, it's quite easy to dive into and attach yourself to that as a person of color. You know, if we look at the superhero world as an example, I think, we're always talking about diversity on screen or, on any sort of platform at the moment. And I think superheroes have been doing it for years, really. Unfortunately, it's on the page. It doesn't reflect on screens or television shows or anything like that. But there is a lot of there's a lot of culture in that sort of stuff. But sometimes it's a thinly veiled culture, and I think that's sort of what is kind of the big movement at the moment is making sure that black culture is on the page and it's done right.
So Ryan, you're on Blurred Culture, which has Nayuka Gori, Miranda Tapsell, Roxane Gay,
Colson.
Colson, yeah. Yes. I was like, someone really impressive that I'm drawing a blank on.
Yeah, I'm reading his book at the moment and it is phenomenal. It's hard-hitting. It doesn't hold its punches back at all. It's amazing.
I mean, you're definitely putting it right there on the page. You're the creator and showrunner of Cleverman, which we'll start talking about the TV first because I know there's also the comic that's coming out and that's kind of cool. But in terms of actually like approaching an Aboriginal superhero, were you looking to fit within the canon or were you looking to sort of break the mold and make your own?
I think it was a bit of it's mixing the two together, I think, because as an example, because we have the cultural sensitivities around what a clever man is, you sort of can't fit the standard superhero mold because if we use film as an example, you always have that 2-minute montage sequence where, as Spider-Man, for example, is figuring out how to use his web and how to swing and all that sort of stuff. But for our Cleverman, we can't really tell that because that, from the elders and the country there where we got these stories, it was strictly men's business. So we can't portray that initiation or coming of age to be able to do that. So we have to, mold it to what works for us. So I think we definitely lean on that world, but I think we make sure that we stay true to the culture first.
And I think what was really interesting about it is the fact that because it is that sort of meld, a lot of people outside of Australia were finding it quite easy to step in and see themselves as Hunter Lockhart's Page's character, like as sort of the hero or the sort of, well, someone who wants to be a hero.
Yeah, absolutely. I think two things I think that's really helped make this show travel is one, our culture's never really been portrayed on screen to this sort of level where it makes us quite unique and everyone's sort of looking for that something new to watch. But the politics are so relatable and that's what's universal about the program.
I just am finding it really interesting that, you're not seeing... There is no other equivalent of Cleverman at the moment on screens that I can think of. Maybe you can think of something.
Look, I think there's, I think there are shows that are having a political agenda, like we do. In the superhero world, I think we've got Luke Cage, and I think...
Well, that did... I was thinking about Luke Cage as having a predominantly non-white cast, and a lot of the critiques that have come up around it have been things that have happened in Jessica Jones, in Daredevil, certainly in Iron Fist, which we're not even going to talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just was fascinating to see the level of antagonism that was thrown at Luke Cage when it wasn't doing anything. Well, the only thing that it was doing hugely different was that it was not
it was being
white.
Black.
Yeah,
yeah, no, absolutely. It was interesting. I posted a photo the other day of I'm currently watching. Well, I just finished last night, Dear White People, and I was really interested to see what the Universal audience are thinking of it, and went on to see that, you know, on places like Rotten Tomatoes and stuff, it was getting like 100%, and you know, a lot of people were praising it. But then on one platform, it was a lot lower, and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So I went to check Clever Man as well, and we were higher on these others, and there was the one platform that was lower, and it felt like, you know, going to read, you know, as you should never do, but I do, is go and read the comment section, and you know, you find that it's harder to get past some of those critiques, because that's the first door that they get to, and they don't want to open it. And I think, you know, and I was just asking, you know, a lot of my white friends of like, can you watch it? And the first thing was like, well, I don't want to feel like I'm being preached to. And I feel like at a stage there, a lot of black storytelling has kind of got to that. And I think that was one of the main reasons why we wanted to do a superhero show, is that to embed the politics in that, to allow people to come to that on their own terms. I still think that we are quite forward in our politics.
Well, it's a really fascinating... I feel like it's that that sort of thing of when you're used to silence, a whisper sounds like a yell, and it just... That's where I feel like it's sitting right now. People who are used to silence are a little disconcerted at the one,
absolutely,
two shows.
Well, I think that's, you know, that's the one question that I get asked a lot is, you know, what would you like to see as the outcome for the show? And for me, the first thing was always about empowering my son, and I've seen, you know, the way that the show has affected him and how it has empowered him. But for me, it's always also been about getting more black people on screen, and seeing genre back on Australian television, or just in Australian cinema in general. I think we're missing genre, which we used to do a lot of. But I think it's quite hard to get through that. You know, like we were firstly making a predominantly black show, which scares a lot of people, and then doing genre that scared a lot of people. So to have the opportunity to even do it and for it to get a strong following, I think hopefully we're opening the doors for more of this sort of content.
Look, we better very quickly talk about the comic book. Is, first of all, what's happening with that? Is that going to be following the same plot line? Is it going to take a whole different direction?
Yeah, so it is in the same world. We are the first issue is following a story of one character that we're already aware of, Malian, who was played by Adam Briggs.
Oh, yeah.
And also follows a new character that will be on the second season. But the story starts pre-season one. And will kind of, the first few issues will sort of be pre-season one all the way up to the start of season two. So it's kind of blends a bit of the two, but it doesn't specifically just follow Cohen, our main character.
Fantastic.
My mind has just been blown.
2SER.com.
And you're on 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft. And that was Rudy Bremer's interview with Ryan Griffin. He's the Clever Man creator, and he was on a panel called Blurred Culture, looking at representation and race in geek and nerd culture. Now, The Thin Black Line is on 2SER every Monday night from 7 p.m, providing complexity and nuance into the analysis of Indigenous affairs that is missing from the mainstream media. So if you want to catch up with Rudy, hear more of the great radio she's producing, tune in on Monday night or go to 2SER.com and look for The Thin Black Line. Now, this is the end of Final Draft for another week. Sydney Writers Festival is fading into our taillights, but the books keep coming. So I will be back next week with more reads for you to check out. Now, don't go anywhere, of course. The Vulture's Nest is coming up next. But to get you there, I have a track. This is from Briggs, featuring Garamal. I selected this one. Briggs is, of course, one of the stars of Clever Man. So Briggs, featuring Garamal, amazing voice Garamal has. And this is called The Hunt. My name is Andrew Popel. I'll see you next week for more Final Draft.
I work like that and deserve it. These clowns get around like they're missing a circus. Superb, it's amazing how they're twisting their verbs. And the kids get excited and they reach for their person. Spend their hard earned, start repeating your verses. Reaching for the stars but not reaching the person. Jumping the deep end, just breaking the surface. Not standing in line so they can not service. But you gotta be patient. Are you willing to wait there when the time is right? Are you ready to take it? I've been honing my components, waiting for my moment. And now I'm gonna earn it, just feed me my opponents. Ain't no one been ahead of me. I'm spitting kerosene, the catalog is junk, man. I'm leaving legacy. And I give them every right to be mad at me. They can only take aim at the one they see.
Take a shot, son.
Put that on my headstone. The epitaph fit. The fact of that is, got to crack in that whip and put a dent in your headphones. Homeless, I wasn't ready for home yet. I was building my name up and hedging my own bed. I was out on the road, missing more than my own bed. Missing these pieces that were keeping my own head. Got caught up, sort of, swapped in for water. Jordan for my daughter, brought up borders. Crowds still applauders, could be given four quarters. From standing in the corner with anxiety disorders. Glutton for punishment, I was heading back. Hand me a sentence of antidepressants and I'm seated as a second in my landed a sentence, but I'm independent like dependent on my neck.
And if thin words happen, they ain't never coming easy. It's the heart that went wrong that bringing up a meal. And if thin words happen, they ain't never coming easy.
stories, ideas, music. 2SER 107.3.